Arise Podcast. My name is Tanya Anderson. I'm the CEO at Arise, and it's my real pleasure to have with me Rebecca Alder, who is manager of our Ombudsman Program. Welcome.
Thank you, Tanya.
So what does a long-term care ombudsman do?
Well, a long-term care ombudsman, basically the principles of our program is that we are here to educate, empower, advocate, and refer. Long-term care ombudsmans, you know, they serve as an advocate and a resource for people who live in, you know, skilled nursing facilities as well as other residential facilities in the area. Our advocacy, it's all resident-centered and confidential. Ombudsman, you know, must receive permission from the resident or the representative to advocate on their behalf. You know, simply because we don't have enough staff and volunteers, again, a big part of what we do is educate and empower. Educate and empower the residents to speak up for themselves and to sound the alarms when they're not happy with their care.
And that's so consistent with what Arise does as an independent living center, which is giving the person that we're serving the power to make their life look like how they want it to be.
Absolutely. And that's why the Ombudsman Program is such a great fit with Arise. Absolutely.
And what sort of a region do we cover?
So we are Region 10, and that covers Onondaga, Cayuga, Oswego, and Cortland counties. That's approximately 7,000 residents in 63 facilities.
Wow, 7,000 people living in 63 facilities.
Yes, it's a lot.
And how many staff do we have doing all this work?
Well, we have myself as well as one full-time coordinator and one part-time coordinator.
Okay, so that's 2.5 people.
Correct.
And we depend on volunteers as well, right?
Absolutely. We really do depend on volunteers to meet the needs of the residents that we serve in the counties.
And how many volunteers do we have right now?
Currently, we have 9. And, you know, typically a volunteer covers, you know, a skilled nursing facility. I do have some volunteers that cover more than one facility, which is helpful. But as you can imagine, there's still a great need.
Absolutely. So what are some of the things that our staff and volunteers do on a day-to-day basis in these facilities?
Well, we provide what's called routine visits. That's where we basically go room to room, and we introduce ourselves, and we give literature. We tell residents exactly what we do, what services we can provide. Sometimes, you know, residents are leery of telling ombudsman what exactly is going on because they're afraid of retaliation. In addition to the routine visits, what primarily the program staff does is we answer complaints that come in through our hotline as well as referrals in the community.
Okay, so it sounds like we're on site in the facilities, we're building relationships with people, and then once we have those relationships, they kind of open up and say, this is what's going on, this is what I'd like to have going on. And then we take that information, and what do we do with it?
Well, the cornerstones of our program is confidentiality and permission to act. The residents call the shots. So they may say, I have this issue, but I really don't want you to act on that. Ombudsman can investigate complaints several ways. We can look at it systematically throughout the facility, find other residents that may share the same grievance, or if the resident does give us permission to act, we can investigate that. We do it through chart review, interviews, etc. And ideally, we would come up with a resolution for the resident that they feel it's efficient to solve their issue.
Can you give me some examples of some of the concerns that residents will bring to your attention? Because it really runs the gamut.
It really does. I mean, prior to COVID, we saw a lot of complaints such as my coffee is cold or you know, the facility is not providing activities I enjoy. Since COVID, the complaints are absolutely much more egregious. We're seeing concerns of call bells not being answered for 2 to 3 hours. Short staffing is an issue at every facility. Meal service has decreased in quality. An example of a case I had recently was that actually a facility lost a resident's prosthetic leg. It was a resident that did not speak English, so she could not advocate for herself. It was a 9-month investigation, but we were able to get the facility to pay for a new prosthetic.
That's shocking. So if I'm hearing you right, there was a resident, the facility lost her prosthetic leg, and it took 9 months to resolve it?
It did, simply because the facility did not feel it was their responsibility to pay for a new prosthetic. A new prosthetic leg with the fitting is approximately $25,000. But we don't give up. That's my motto, never give up. And, you know, through hard work and just keep, you know, going at it, we were able to get the facility to agree to that. We had to go through corporate, but we were successful in that case.
Congratulations on that. It just seems like common sense that those things don't just disappear. Someone had to be responsible, and I assume the original leg was never found?
Correct.
Wow.
Yes.
And some of the other things you mentioned really sound concerning, and you think it's directly related to the workforce issue in these facilities?
It's part of it. I mean, we did see short staffing levels prior to COVID, but COVID absolutely exacerbated it. And there are facilities where there is one aide to 40 to 50 residents at a time. So it's pretty challenging.
That sounds beyond challenging. What would be an ideal ratio of an aide to a number of residents?
I would say 1 to 10. 1 CNA to 10 residents, but it's very rare that we see anything below 25, 1 to 25.
Wow. And during COVID, you and your staff were a real lifeline between the residents and families, even though you, like anybody else, could not physically go into the facilities. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we still worked the entire time we were not permitted in facilities. We did a lot of phone work, and we actually participated in care planning with staff and the residents via phone. So we still had many cases come in. The biggest complaint during COVID was lack of visitation. So facilities had strict guidelines on who they could allow in. Once that was lifted, facilities were still really leery of having visitors. So that was probably one of the highest complaints we had during that year was the facility's resistance to having visitors come in for residents.
And that's a real delicate balance, too, because they're trying to keep people safe, but you're also trying to have access and keep them safe in different ways. It must have been so stressful for you.
It was. It was a stressful time, but we got through it, and now we're back in facilities. And the good thing is that the Department of Health made it so that even if there's another pandemic or COVID reemerges, Ombudsman will always have access going forward. That will not happen again.
That's a huge win.
It was a great win. Yes,
absolutely. You talked a little bit about volunteers, and it's very obvious that they're crucial to the success of the program.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the training these people receive?
Absolutely. So to be a certified ombudsman, it's the same for volunteers as for program staff. You must go through a pre-certification class shadowing, which is 4 hours, and then you have to go through a 40-hour certification training. After the certification training, there is a post-shadow requirement of 6 hours. So before an ombudsman is actually even certified, that's 50 hours. After the ombudsman is certified, the requirement going forward is 18 hours of continuing education per year. And that's pretty high. That's actually more than a licensed social worker. So here at Arise, we do offer all of the continuing education so that our certified ombudsman volunteers can maintain that easily.
That sounds like a huge time commitment by a volunteer. So what kind of people come to us? They're obviously very special people that would commit that sort of time and energy to this program. What seems to motivate them?
Well, it's when I look at the current volunteers we have, the majority are retired, so they have the time to spend in facilities. A requirement of our volunteers is that it is a minimum of 2 hours per week in a facility. We have that requirement so that they can spend the time getting to know the residents and actually know what's going on in their facility. Typically, the volunteers we have, they don't necessarily have backgrounds in long-term care, but we do have some former nurses. We have an attorney. We have a former professor. So really, our volunteers come from all walks of life. But the one thing that ties everyone together is their desire to serve seniors in their community.
Amazing. And I can tell just from listening to you that you're very passionate about this work as well.
I am.
What drives your passion in this program?
Great question. I get a lot of self-satisfaction from not only assisting residents solving their concerns and grievances, but also watching the volunteers grow. And to come into the programs, a new volunteer, you're nervous, you're not sure what you're doing. You know, through the continuing education and the coaching, to see that resident, or excuse me, see that volunteer grow into a person who is more confident and actually really enjoys investigating cases and solving those grievances for residents. It's really, you know, that is why I do my job. I think about the cases we've had the last year. We actually had over 3,000 information and assistance to both residents and their representatives, their families. And we also, that brought to 400 cases, grievances that we were able to resolve. So I take a lot of pride in that we maybe not open a case for every complaint simply due to the circumstances or if the resident does not give permission, but just the fact that we're providing that information to assist to so many people.
And that number, over 400 cases, is really astounding. That's, you know, more than one a day.
Yes.
You're doing.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's the typical timeline to resolve a case?
Well, typically we try to resolve cases within 45 days, but for the more complex cases, it could take as long as 9 months. It just all depends on the circumstances. If a case is looking like it's going to take more than the 30 to 45 days, we might put a staff person on it just to kind of expedite things. But that is the goal, to solve grievances within 45 days.
Wow. And if someone wanted to become a volunteer or learn more about it, what should they do?
Oh, well, they can call me at Arise. My name, again, is Rebecca Alder, and my phone number is 315-671-5108. My number is also on the posters that are in every facility. By federal law, they must display the ombudsman poster. So that is how we get referrals, grievances as well.
You had talked about the, you know, what drives you and the passion, and one of the things you said, Rebecca, is really just watching the volunteers grow and how you manage this program. And you're too modest to say this yourself, but I sat in on an exit interview with the folks from the state who come and audit our work and make sure that we're doing everything right, and they had such high praise for you specifically and for this program being really a model for the state. So I just want to congratulate on it.
Thank you.
On that.
Thank you. Well, we have a lot of support here at Arise.
Oh, thanks. And I'm also thinking about, you know, some more of the success stories that I've heard about. And there was one in particular about getting a couple together in a room.
Yes. So actually, that's a fantastic story. So we had these two sisters. They had lived together their whole lives. When they needed advanced care, they approached facilities and they found a facility that guaranteed they could room together. Once the sisters came into the facility separated them. And their reasoning was, well, you know, we're afraid of medication errors because they share the same last name. So we took that case on. And we argued that, you know, husband and wives are allowed to room together and should room together. And also, you know, we are seeing, you know, more same-sex couples coming into facilities. So we argued that, you know, really that is the responsibility of the facility and the staff to make sure their medication system is spot on and should not impede in having the two sisters room together. It took a few weeks, but we were successful. Part of our investigation is always a follow-up. We want to meet with the resident after the resolution to make sure that what the facility agreed to do is actually happening. So when I went into the facility a few weeks later and met with the sisters, there was a lot of tears, all happy tears. And, you know, basically it was, you know, thanks to you and the ombudsman program, we can now room together. And it never would have happened without the support of the ombudsman program. So that is definitely one of our success stories that I'm very proud of.
And you have so many success stories, and I know we've been talking about some really serious things. I mean, people being able to live in the room together with the person that they choose, medication, meals, all those things. But the quality of life issues which are seemingly minor, are so big in facilities. I mean, you talked about the cold coffee, and but that's, if that's your world, it's so important. And just the lifeline that you provide to folks is amazing. I've gotten letters from families just praising the work of your staff and our volunteers, and I just can't thank you enough for everything that you do.
Well, we all love what we do, and it shows, so we're happy to do it.
Thanks so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
For more information on how you can support Arise, visit our website at ariseinc.org. Support Arise. Support independence.